in today's show. Yeah, I'm doing it. We're going back. We're starting the draft cycle. And to start the draft cycle, we're looking back at the 2022 NBA draft. Let's have a look what we would do different. Michael Bolton.
Thanks, Josh. It's Michael Bolton here, and it's time for another episode of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast. Let's get to it.
Let's get to it, indeed.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com. And you can find me on Twitter, as always, at @RedRock_BBall, on TikTok at @RedRock_BBall, and on Instagram at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Thank you for making Locked On Fantasy Basketball your first listen every day. We are free. We are available on all platforms. So we're going to do 2022 NBA redraft. It's just kicking off the 2023 NBA draft cycle. Over the next 6 weeks, 7 weeks before the NBA draft, we are going to do a bunch of stuff. The lottery is next week, and then I will have my first mock draft out. We will have on guests starting next week, analyzing draft prospects. We are still going to be doing the remaining 14 team season reviews. As the season rolls on, we're going to be doing more dynasty content leading up to a live NBA draft show extravaganza. Last year, we had a really, really great live show going, and I think it'll be better and bigger this year. That'll all culminate in that, but this is the beginning of the draft cycle for this show. In terms of real-life NBA stuff going on at the moment, we had all NBA teams released. Yeah, a few quibbles there. I don't really think that LeBron should have made it on the third team. I've got no problem with Luka or Shea making it on the first team. It's hard to pick, man. There are a lot of really, really good players in the NBA, and it is hard to make those decisions. We also had the announcement of Mark Jackson not putting Nikola Jokic on his MVP ballot, and then his excuse for doing that was, I thought I was voting all NBA, which doesn't make it better. It makes it worse somehow. The fact that you don't pay enough attention, because I wasn't thinking. The fact that you're not thinking while you're casting your MVP vote or any of your votes and you're just putting the wrong thing down literally makes it worse. I that's what I think anyway. Maybe I'm wrong on that. And we've got the NBA playoffs with all of these semifinal games going to 6 games at least. By the time you listen to this, we might have some resolutions in the Denver Phoenix series and the Philadelphia Boston series. But these playoffs have been awesome, I think, because of the closeness. People will complain at times about, well, there's no great team, all these teams are flawed and there's asterisks. To me, it's great that we're getting this level of increased parity and competitiveness right across the board. I think it's great for the sport. I think it's great for NBA. I think it's great for watching. It's great for these playoffs that every matchup, even when you think, well, yeah, Boston's going to smash Philly and the Knicks are going to get creamed, and they come back and they have these big performances. And we are going to see, I think, really, really great matchups all the way through, no matter who it is. Don't care if it's big market or small market. Literally couldn't give a shit about any of that stuff. I think it's awesome the way things are playing out at the moment, and I'm excited to see where we go. Now, we've got the 2022 NBA draft redraft. Now, is it silly to redraft after 1 year? Yeah, it's really dumb. It is. Because as when we talk through this, I don't know what's going to happen in 3 years' time. I don't. But I like to do this just to see where how my opinions have changed over the last 12 months, or not even in my opinions necessarily, how I would view the draft after this time, impressive performances throughout the season, and how that's changed our viewpoint on things, and trying to pay attention to, like, again, you're never redrafting. This doesn't happen in real life. We like to give a little bit more time. I like to give probably 3 years, 2 to 3 years on guys at least to form more concrete opinions. But when we're talking fantasy as well, dynasty leagues, real life leagues, you need to have opinions on guys at all points and be sort of moving and changing that. This is not a redraft for dynasty leagues. This is a straight NBA value draft for the first round. I'm not going to do all 60 picks, or 58 picks actually, there was in 2022, same as there will be in 2023. The top 30 for me picks in the draft from 2022. So, warning.
Let's get it on, Gilly.
All right. Boring as shit, the first two. Number one is Paolo Banchero. Number two is Chet Holmgren. That's what I'm going to stick with. Paolo won the Rookie of the Year. Easily. He was great. He took a huge usage. He was able to score really well. He showed passing ability. There was efficiency problems. And in 3 years' time, we might look back on this and Polo won't be number one. But he went number one. He won the Rookie of the Year. He was carrying a gigantic offensive load and performed pretty well on a team that struggled. It's impossible for me to go a different direction at this point. Again, I would not look at this and say in 3 years' time, he would definitely be the number one pick. Numerous guys could jump ahead of him if we redo this. And maybe we'll redo the 2020 draft or the 2019 draft, because that is 4 years on or 3 years on. We'll see how we view those drafts then. Maybe we'll do that. But it's very hard for me to move Polo ahead or away from number one. And I know Chet Holmgren's played 0 minutes. I know that. He hasn't played a single second. But this draft was considered weaker. I think that played out. I think that's true. But Chet was one of the elite level prospects. And to me, he was always in that 1-2 zone. I think I had... Did I have Chet at one at one point in the draft? It definitely never dropped in below two. We didn't get to see him, so we didn't get to pick his game apart. But everything about Chet, the scoring, the defense, some passing, some shooting, it's still all there. We saw flashes of it in Summer League. I know he got hurt, but nobody behind him, I don't think, put the case forward that I would jump ahead of this talent that Chet has. So I would still pick him at number two, and I don't really have any like concern about that. We get some changes next. For the next two picks. At number three, I am going to take Jaden Ivey. Now, Jaden Ivey went number five overall in the draft. I had him at number four. And while there were definite negatives to his game this season, they're the negatives that plague rookie guards all the time. Inefficiencies, some low assist numbers, some low turnovers. All that stuff is very commonplace. He had lower minutes, which is very common with guards as well. I played like 30 instead of like 33, 34. I'm taking him. This is not really team dependent, because again, when we're looking at the draft, we go back and go, oh, well, the Rockets wouldn't do that. They got Jalen Green and they had Kevin Porter. Yeah, in the end, in 5 years' time, if he becomes this player, then the Rockets don't care about Kevin Porter, or they might not care about Jalen Green. So this is not about team fit, especially at the pointy end. Just take the blokes who you think are better. And I think Jaden Ivey was there. So I had him at four. He was picked at five. I've got him at three. I think that he showed enough. Yes, a lot of that came when Cade Cunningham was out, but being able to elevate your game and do those things is a really important thing. There are plenty of players, when given opportunities, don't elevate their game. So I think that archetype of a fast ball creator, that's not really a word, is it? A creative player who can pass, can create their own shot, can show offensive boost and burst. Defensively, there's a lot to work on, but what I saw from Ivy had me impressed enough to push him up to number three. At number four, this one was a pretty big rise, and I'm not certain how I feel about it.
Broncos country, let's ride.
Jalen Williams was awesome, right? He was unbelievably good. He was the 12th pick in the draft. He was runner-up in Rookie of the Year, rightfully so. First team all rookie, although a few people didn't put him there, which is nonsense. He is a little bit older, but he's not that old. He's 21, he'll be 22 starting next season. He showed unbelievable efficiency, unbelievable defense, an ability to ramp up and scale back. Defensive, passing, all of it was there. And you could very easily make the argument that he should go at two, because he finished second in Rookie of the Year. Like, he was the second best rookie this season without any doubt whatsoever. But I don't think it's as easy as just saying, well, second Rookie of the Year, second pick in the draft. A little bit older. Some other guys that I think, like Chet and like Ivy, who have higher upsides than Williams. And I'll put him at number four. Where would you have the Bronco? Would you go to two? Is four too high? If you are watching this on YouTube or even listening, you can tweet it at me, but drop it in the comments. Where would you have the Bronco, Jalen Williams? Today's episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. For a championship team, it's all about making sure every player is a perfect fit. It's the same when it comes to your vehicle. Every part needs to fit just right. So the next time you need parts and accessories, head to eBay Motors. With eBay Guaranteed Fit, you can be sure every part you need fits right the first time around. Just add your ride to My Garage and look for the green check to know the part will fit or your money back. Just like in sports, confidence is the name of the game when you shop on eBay Motors. And with over 122 million parts to choose from, you'll be back in the game in no time. After all, it's easy to bring home a win when the right parts are guaranteed. Get the right parts, the right fit, the right prices on ebaymotors.com. Let's ride.
Broncos country, let's ride.
eBay Guaranteed Fit only available to US customers, eligible items only, and exclusions apply. So, this is where things get a little bit interesting, I think. At number 5, Jabari Smith. Smith was the 3rd overall pick to the Rockets. Smith was put in a very tough situation with a non-NBA level head coach, with 2 ball-pounding, ball-hogging guards, a situation where he was never seen plays run for him. Now, Jabari didn't help his case necessarily because he shot really poorly. But in a real team and a real ecosystem, this is a guy that can shoot threes, needs to work a lot on shooting for sure, but can defend, can protect the rim, and still has tons of upside. He's still insanely young. And I did debate, whether should he be ahead of Ivy? Should he be ahead of Williams? His ability, and look, the thing there with Ivy and with Jalen Williams ahead of him, is their ramp-up ability, their ability to create their own shots, their ability to drive an offense when they need to. And I don't know that Jabari has that. Defensively, still really good. I think he's going to be quite good defensively, perimeter and interior. I think he's going to be able to shoot. There needs to be better on the two-point finishing for sure. And my worry with him is passing will never be there, and self-creation and usage, that's a problem. But the archetype of what he brings, that defensive shooting big man with some more offensive upside, I think it's too... I know it was disappointing from him. It's too hard for me to go past him at 5. But I could have easily had Shaedon Sharpe at 5. He was at 6. He was drafted at 7. I've moved him to 6. Now, Sharpe had one of the worst peripheral stat sets in the NBA for most of the season. Never got assists or rebounds, never generated steals, turnovers, nothing. Didn't do anything. He just scored a little bit and jumped really high. And jumping really high is good, of course. It doesn't last forever. He's young. But then we talk ramp up. He was able to, when the Blazers shut down a bunch of players, he was able to elevate his game. He showed that he was able to pass. He was able to drive some offense. He was able to score for himself. He was able to play a little bit better defense. And while that last 20 games or so of the season, is not indicative of what he's going to do next season. My understanding is they will be ramping his role up next season. He's got the frame. He's got the athleticism. He's got the scoring burst. He's got the shooting touch for him to be at 6. Now, by no means was Shaedon Sharpe or even Jabari Smith, the 5th and 6th best rookies this season. Not remotely close to it. There were other players better than them. But part of the idea of the draft and this redraft, which is of course a fake concept, part of the idea of it is, what happens in 5 years? What happens in 10 years? Who's got the best ability to be the better player here? And, Shaedon could be number 1 in this class very easily. In 5 years' time, he could be the best player out of this group. I don't think Jabari ever would. But I think Shaedon could be, easily. He could average 25, 5, and 5 with 1.5 steals on 50% shooting. That's not crazy to me. And that sort of upside, where I think he can do all of those things, is why I pick him at 6 and why I pick him over some guys who 100% had better rookie seasons than he did. Because it's not all about what did you do as a rookie. That's like trying to evaluate, and I know a lot of Kings fans did this, we definitely won the Haliburton-Sabonis trade because we made the playoffs this season and the Pacers didn't. Cool, doesn't matter. That's not how you evaluate these moves in the short term. It's got to have a more long-term view because we can look back on it in 3-4 years and go, that's crazy because the Pacers just won a title. They won't. But, all that stuff can change, much like this with Shaedon, where he wasn't a top 6 player this season, wasn't a top 6 rookie. But we come back in 2026 and he might have made the All-Star team and he might have averaged 20 points a game and he might be a legitimate star. And I can see that upside for him. Is the next bit controversial? Wow. Just saw something just on the Mark Jackson thing. I just saw something unbelievable. Mark Jackson on here giving his excuse. I didn't know what I was looking at. I voted it like my All-NBA team. Someone went and found what his All-NBA first team vote was, and it was different to his NBA list. Oh, this guy. His MVP was Embiid, Giannis, Tatum, Shea, and Mitchell. His All-NBA first team was Giannis, Tatum, Embiid, Jaylen Brown, and Shea. Is this bloke serious? Oh, LeBron's jealous of how much of a liar Mark Jackson is. That's where... Jesus. Anyway. you wonder why he hasn't been a head coach again. Huh. Let's go to the next group of guys. At number 7, I am going to take Walker Kessler. Now, Walker Kessler was by far the third best rookie this season. Walker Kessler was, by almost any advanced metric you will find, the best rookie this season. The best EPM, the best Darko, the best LeBron. He was the best rookie by every impact metric you will find. He was the third best rookie in Rookie of the Year, all rookie first team. I've moved him up from 22 to 7. The reason that I haven't gone higher is that players like Ivy, Williams, Sharp, Banchero, usage guys, number one offense option guys, elite defenders, perimeter and interior upside players like Jabari are more valuable. Kessler can be a very strong player, a 10-year NBA starting center who leads the league in blocks multiple times and makes multiple all-defensive teams. That is all very, very true. But in terms of winning a championship, advancing to the final eight in playoffs, the final four in playoffs, he can get you into really good stuff, but he needs somebody else to do the things that the guys ahead of him on this list can do. What Shaden could do, might not, but could do. What even Jalen Williams could do, what Ivy could do, what Banchero could do. And Kessler will never be that. He'll never be a usage player. He'll have some struggles defensively on the perimeter at times, I think. I think there is some shooting to come from him, but he's just a really, really, really good piece who was great this season, who can still improve from this season, but that tippy-top level, can you ever see him in MVP discussions? I'm not even saying you can see these other guys in MVP discussions, but it's a lot easier to see them in MVP discussions than it is for Kessler. So seven's a big jump forward, but I think that archetype of player that Kessler is, it's really hard for me to justify taking someone like that higher. It's like, it'd be like taking, for example, I don't know, hypothetically, DeAndre Ayton over Luka Doncic, right? DeAndre Ayton could be solid. He's actually not at the moment, but he could be solid. But it doesn't matter when those other players hit, they're way better. And that's sort of what I feel with Kessler. At number eight, I've got Keegan Murray. But Josh, they made the playoffs. He was a starter. Yep. He broke the record for rookie threes. This is all very true. 100% true. But again, what can Keegan Murray do overall upside ceiling level? I think he's a very valuable player in the right position. And that actually worked for the Kings this season. But has he got number one offensive option upside? I don't think so. Is he older than everyone else on this list so far? Yes. Defensively, he had trouble at times, 100%. Does he show the ability to ramp up usage-wise? Hasn't really shown it. Passing, not really there. A very valuable player. Again, very similar to his current teammate, Harrison Barnes, who is solid, is strong, can be a starter for very, very many years. And that's why I've got him at eight, down from pick four where he was picked. I think overall, when I did my draft before the NBA draft last year, I think I had him at nine around this spot. So my opinion of him improved slightly, but I still think that everything that I thought about Keegan Murray, which was really strong player, good role player, he's got some shooting upside. I worry that the fact that, you know, those defensive stats at Iowa weren't real and that the usage you got at Iowa has no way of carrying over. And all of that played out. A very strong role player with number two offensive option upside, I think, but maybe third option upside is probably more realistic. Great shooter, really useful player, just not as useful upside-wise as other guys. And again, lots of you will disagree. Tell me about it. If you disagree, mate, just put the comments down there. I don't care. Tell me what you think. That's how I'm trying to view players. There's another guy who had a really strong rookie season who I don't even have yet. I've got him now at number nine, Benedict Mathurin, old Humpty Dumpty. He was picked at number six by the Pacers, scored quite a lot. He was really useful. He was very good. And part of the reason of dropping him from six to nine for me is that just there are guys ahead of him that I think did better, or guys that were drafted behind him that did better. Like, I don't think you can argue that Jalen Williams had a worse season than Mathurin. You can't. Nobody can argue that. Williams was better, so Williams jumps ahead of Mathurin. Walker Kessler, super impactful, jumps ahead of Mathurin. Who else did I jump ahead of him? Shaden Sharp, I jumped ahead of him. I just think there's a little bit more upside in what Sharp can do than Mathurin, but you could argue that either way. But that's why he moved from six to nine, is I pushed Walker Kessler ahead, I pushed Jalen Williams ahead, and I pushed Shaden Sharp ahead. Not because I hate Benedict Mathurin, because I think Mathurin's still really useful, but his inability to pass, his defensive issues, his wavering efficiency stuff was a little bit of a concern. Again, rookies will improve in this area. I just worry if there is overall number one option upside for Mathurin. There could be, but does that lead you to a good team? I'm not certain about that. But really, the reason he's dropped down from 6 to 9 is that I just think that three players picked behind him were better. It's as simple as that to me. At number 10, it is the passport legend, Jalen Duren. I debated this one quite a bit because, again, some of my ethos in drafting is a center worth it? And because this draft is not particularly strong overall, that it does give a little bit of a boost. Now, if we're talking 2023 draft, it feels to me that out of like the top 18 players in that draft, 16 of them, numbers made up off the top of my head, but 16 of them can play the 2, the 3, or the 4. They're wings. They're tall guards. There's no real centers. Yeah, after you get from Wembanyama, who's not really a center, the next center is, and maybe I'm just missing someone off the top of my head, is it Derek Lively? There's no centers in that draft. So all of those wings are way more valuable. But in this draft, the centers were productive. And Duren can be a really useful player, but much like Kessler, can he ever be a number one guy? Can he be a defensive player of the year? I don't know about that. Can he be solid enough to be in that discussion? Yeah, I think he was really useful. And, you know, I could go back to this list in a week's time and go, the guys that I have 11 and 12, he'll see in a second, I could easily have ahead of Duren. Duren's still good. He was picked 13th overall. I think him at 10 is fine. He showed enough. He's young. He's strong. He's a good rebounder. He can defend okay. He showed some passing flashes. There's a little bit of upside there. But the two guys coming after him, I'm looking at it now. I probably should have had him higher because this the position value of these players is more valuable. And yeah, without further ado, who are they? Well, at number 11, I had Jeremy Sochan.
Sochan now.
Sochan started nearly all season for the Spurs, had some fake knee injuries towards the end. Played point guard, played power forward, played small forward. Improved his free throw shooting, still not great. Showed stuff. I thought that he'd be a better defender than he was. I thought he'd be a worse offensive player than he was. So he's still got room to improve in those areas. That 6'9" perimeter defender who's handling the ball a little bit is really useful. But my worry is there, what if the shot never comes? And I think that's a legitimate concern. And that is probably, not probably, that is why I've kept him down here at 11, down from his drafted spot of number 9. Very useful, really good upside, ball handling's intriguing, but is it enough to get us higher than that? I don't think so. And at number 12, it's Tari regular season, preseason, tank season, postseason, whatever. Eason was one of the most impactful players for fantasy, yes, but in the NBA as a rookie. Advanced metrics all loved him. His role on Houston was comically small. He is an older player again. That limits some of his upside. Can he be a starter? Yeah, 100%. Like, he's absolutely a chance to be a starter. He's a defensive terror. We could have this discussion. I think that it's really, really clear that it is simple to say that Eason can very easily be better than Keegan Murray. He doesn't mean he's going to be, but defensively, he's going to be excellent. Murray's obviously a better shooter. But if he gets anything going with his shooting, Tari, then he is going to be more valuable than this. A little bit older, less star upside, no usage, gigantic usage upside, although he was a high usage player at LSU. And it was decent usage for Houston. Got a lot of the parts and pieces that you look for. So I've jumped him from 17 to 12. I could jump him higher than this, but I think this feels about right. Now, this next one feels wrong to me, but I couldn't really find out where to put him. And at number 13, it's Dyson Daniels. I thought that Daniels was in a situation where it was hard for him to get minutes, and that proved true. And then when he played, I thought he looked awesome. And this is probably the most egregious is the wrong word, but when I look at this and go, am I just basing it off this last season? Probably yes here with Dyson. Ankle injuries hurt him. By the way, Dyson Daniels got a brother coming through in a couple of years. Looks pretty good as well. Dash Daniels. Looks really good. Dyson, if he finds the right role, like tall, defensive guard who can handle and score a little bit. The problem, much like Sochan, is the shooting. I think he's a better defender than Sochan. I think he's a better passer than Sochan. But I'm going to put them in the same area. Sochan's produced, Dyson hasn't. So it is harsh for me to drop him away from number 8. I don't think he could ever be a top five player in this class, Daniels, but top six, top seven, yeah. Really, really easy. So while this class is weaker, it is chock full of solid players who are really close in value. The upper elite level guys aren't really there, but the archetype of what Daniels provides, a 6'8", 6'7", point guard, wing, defensive guy who's got passing ability but lacks offense, is a problem that's interesting, it's enticing, but it's also got downside. At number 14, I'm putting Adrian Griffin Jr. He was picked at 16 by the Hawks. At the time in the real draft, they would have picked him about 10. But again, part of the reason he's dropped is because Eason and Kessler and Jalen Williams all produced really, really well. They're all really good, so I jumped them ahead of AJ Griffin. I still think Griffin, who is, I think, the second youngest player in this class behind Duren, I still think Griffin has a real chance to be a single-time all-star in his future, a solid defender, scorer, shooter with a bit of passing upside. And it's very easy for him to be ahead of Sochan. It's very easy for him to be ahead of Mathurin. It's easy for him to be ahead of Keegan Murray. Again, when we look at these things, we see these guys drafted in the same draft. He's 3 years younger than Keegan Murray. He's 3 years younger than Tari Eason. So by the time he hits the end of his rookie contract, he's at the same spot in his development and physical development that these guys are right now. That's why this makes it hard. So again, if I've got a little bit of time to develop players, you could easily jump him ahead of these guys. Because if we evaluate him in 3 years' time, at the end of his rookie contract, where will we be viewing him? Like, put that season into this season's group of guys, he might be top three. There's so much upside in AJ Griffin. And that is why it's why I bang on about age all the time. It's not to say that older players can't be productive. It's not. It's just to say that these younger guys are so far behind that development curve that so much changes. Like, if you would have drafted, I'm going to keep going back to Keegan Murray because he's the oldest player that we've done so far at, you know, going to be 23 at the start of next season. But if we'd be evaluating Keegan Murray after his freshman season at Iowa, he'd be 35th on this list. And if he came straight into the NBA there, he'd have nothing to do. Like, he'd be nowhere close to it. He's not even remotely close. But because he was able to sit at Iowa for a couple of years, put out that big season in his junior season, I think it was, after Luka Garza had gone, we look at his numbers, he plugs in, but he's just older than a lot of these players. And if we did the same thing with a Griffin or with a Daniels or with Sochan or with any of these younger players and evaluated them at age 22, I think we'd have a really different view of it. At number 15 is Charlotte Hornets big man, Mark Williams.
Oh, hi, Mark.
He was picked at 15. I'm picking him at 15. In a draft with more stronger wings, I would drop him down. He's just solid enough to be a good rim protector, good rebounder, good finisher. That's it. No star upside, no game-changing upside, no real offensive upside, just very, very solid. And you can see on the screen who I've got at 16, no debate at all to have number 16 ahead. I would not push back if you said, well, the actual value of number 16, who is Jaden Hardy, is way higher than what Mark Williams brings. I actually probably agree with you. Hardy does run the risk of a little bit of Deion Waitersing. It's like, you can score, you've got the opportunity, but do you end up do enough? Do you need to be the number one guy? Can you help your teammates enough? Can you defend enough? Which always holds him back. But overall, star level upside, Jaden Hardy's well ahead of Mark Williams, well ahead. Jaden Hardy's well ahead of Dyson Daniels and Tari Eason and Jeremy Sochan in that respect as well. I've moved Jaden Hardy, we'll move on from Williams, I've moved Hardy up from 37 to 16. I think I had him around 19 in the draft at that point, and him falling to the second round was insane to me. So I think that, you know, two of the guys I was really big on falling were Griffin and Hardy, and I didn't like how they fell. It didn't make sense to me. I think that they proved in their first season that they shouldn't have fallen as far as they did. And yeah, I've redrafted them appropriately, in my mind. But if Jaden Hardy was top 10 in this draft in 2 years, nobody should be shocked. Nobody. Really strong shot creator, drawing free throws, some passing, some shooting. It's not all there at all, but it's not, you know, comparing against those other shooting guards, Bennick Mathur and Jaden Ivey, he very easily could be better than those guys, really easily. He's not there yet, that's why I'm not having him there. And that's where we, not end, because I'm doing 30, but it's where we get to the stage where I go, okay, I like all of these guys a lot. I can make arguments for them to be in discussions for awards. Dyson Daniels might be an all defensive team award player at some point. Tari Eason might be that guy as well. Mark Williams might get an all-defense second-team nod or in the discussion for it. Jaden Hardy might be able to make an all-star game at some point. Like, AJ Griffin might make an all-star team at some point, like a one-game all-star upside. After these guys, I don't think any of those players exist. So let's go at 17 with a player who's playing quality minutes in the playoffs. And that's Christian Brown for the Nuggets. He was picked at 21. I didn't really love that pick, but he's proven me a little bit wrong there. His defensive stats or defensive production, defensive play has been awesome. Guarding Kevin Durant and giving him problems. He's a lot bigger than you think. Like, you see Christian Brown, you go, okay, what is he, a 6'4 white guy shooter? No, no. He's like a 6'7 strong defensive wing. Doesn't really do much offensively, but he's already shown, hey, he can hang in the NBA. Malone was a little bit fickle with his minutes and rotations this season, but Brown is a rotation player. Brown could be. Let's look at Cleveland, Isaac Okoro. If Christian Brown was in Cleveland, he would start over Isaac Okoro, yeah? And he'd probably play that role better than him. And I reckon Cleveland, with their pick at 14, even though they did trade that to Utah, that they would have loved to have picked Christian Brown at that spot and had an option there. That player, a guy who can defend wings and is big enough and can shoot a little bit, it's really valuable. So I've got him at 17. Got Malachi Branham at number 18. He was 20th overall. Showed some flashes down the stretch. An ability to create your own shot is really important. He still struggles consistency-wise, efficiency-wise. We see plenty of players who can create their own shots. Cam Thomas in Brooklyn, for example, just doesn't do anything else well. Branham might be a little bit like that, so I do worry somewhat of that happening. And there are players who are behind him on my list here who are probably a little bit more well-rounded and can be relied upon as rotation guys. But Branham, I thought, made big strides as the season went on. Pop was able to rely upon him quite a bit as he was fake injuring a lot of the other guys. But Branham, I thought, showed enough to be, hey, you are a rotation player. You've got a little bit of size, a little bit of shooting ability, a little bit of driving ability. Interesting player. At number 19, Andrew Nembhard. He was the 31st pick, first pick in the second round. An older player, like 23 or 24, I think he is now. He made it. Second team all-rookie. Really solid. Started for the Pacers all season. I think there is very limited upside with Nembhard. But, again, the quality of this draft, it is lower. So you're useful enough. You produce enough. Normally, I wouldn't be going with older players. And I've got two older players here in a row, which, again, at this spot, it's not that not big a deal. But with the way this draft goes, these guys, I think, still deserve this spot. So I've got Nembhard at 19, and I've got Oshai Agbaji at number 20. He was picked at 14. I hated the pick of him in the lottery at the time. I think I had him 21 or 22 in my draft. I've got him at 20 here. Solid enough, but at this advanced age, 4 years older than AJ Griffin, or 3 years, maybe I'm exaggerating that. You would hope that the NBA-ready players can come in and be NBA-ready, and he wasn't. He didn't play for the first half of the season. He came in and produced okay, but he was inconsistent, and I'm not sure whatever level he goes to. Can he be a strong rotation player? Maybe. Has he got any star upside? I don't see it. This is where the discussion and the debate for me came in, because then at 21, I've got Usman Dieng, who was picked at number 11 and did nothing. But a 6'9 forward with defensive range, with passing upside, maybe shooting, probably not, but also hyper young. How do I value that versus the solid Andrew Nembhard, Oshai Agbaji production at advanced age? Well, I did put those guys ahead because they showed me something, and Dieng showed me nothing. And Dieng really, even in the NBL last season before he was drafted, didn't show a huge amount. So it's a lot of it with Dieng is based on potential. It's based on measurements. It's based on, but what if? And a lot of the what ifs, shout out to Sekou Doumbouya, don't come true. So I got him at 21. I take the flyer here. I'm not convinced. At 22, I've got David Roddy Piper, who was picked at 23 in the real draft. He played minutes for the Grizzlies. If they had had a competent offseason, he probably wouldn't have. But because they released, or they traded away Melton and they let Kyle Anderson go, Roddy was playing minutes. I don't think he has any starter upside in David Roddy. I think he can be an okay piece that you throw into rotations at times, but will be inconsistent. He's a little bit older as well. He does have some interesting defensive stats ceiling. That's more for fantasy than real life. I think it's totally okay to re-pick him in the first round, and I wouldn't have picked him in the first round before the draft. He showed me enough, and you know, the rest of this class maybe showed me less at times, to pick him at this spot, but I don't feel super excited about it. I'm going to take Johnny Davis at number 23. I'm shit, bloody hell. I'm not taking him at 10. I know that much, which is the Wizards did. I think I had him at 17 or 18 in my final mock draft. He went at 10, which was insane to me. At the time, I hated it. I still hate it, obviously. He had a back problem, allegedly, at times through Summer League and the start of the season, but he was just bad. Now, there were some glimpses from Davis down this stretch here when Kuzma and Beal and Morris and Porzingis were out, but you're eliminating your whole team to let Johnny Davis cook when Johnny Davis couldn't cook at any point during the season doesn't make me that excited. He's got a little bit of size. He can pass a little bit. He can rebound okay. There's some things there for him. I don't see star upside with John. He's also a little bit older. He's not quite Keegan Murray or O'Shea Ibaji old, but he didn't come in at 19. He came in as a sophomore out of Wisconsin. And honestly, maybe 23 is too high. At 24, it's the opposite here. I've got Peyton Watson, who was picked at number 30 after averaging 3 points per game at UCLA, barely played for Denver, and then down the stretch, they played him and went, oh, okay. Now, he's not really getting burned in the playoffs, but what is he? Is he probably a small ball five backup power forward who could blossom into a starting power forward? I think he could. So I have moved him up from 30 to 24 despite not really seeing huge amounts of him. The bits that we saw from him, the athleticism, the defensive awareness, the positioning, the shot blocking is really, really interesting. I don't even know the right sort of player to compare him to. Young, really young. Bad season at UCLA. Great environment to develop here in Denver. I just think at 24, you take that chance on someone who's shown that level of upside. At 25 and 26, I'm taking second round picks. At 25 is Pig Williams, Jalen Williams from Oklahoma City, the center who shot really well, can't really protect the rim, but is one of the best charge takers, as much as I hate charges. He does do that, puts his body on the line, worked his way into a starting role, will lose it next season almost definitely. But this is a rotation level player at very least. He was 34, I'll take him at 25, no problem. Bryce McGowan's went at 40. I've got him at 26. Wing players who can handle a little bit, can pass a little bit, can allegedly shoot a little bit. That's useful. You always need those players. What is he, 6'6", 6'7"? I think he's 6'6". Who can shoot a bit, pass a bit, defend a bit. Started some games down the stretch. That's all really, really useful to me. So I'll take him at 26. At 27, this is the latest pick that I went with, and it's Jabari Walker, who was picked 57th. We didn't see tons of him this season, but I believe there is a good player in Jabari Walker. I believe there is an eighth man backup power forward in Jabari Walker, which at pick 27 in a weaker draft, totally okay with it. Star upside, absolutely not. Solid 6-year rotation player, probably yes. I'd like to see a little bit more from him next season. This is a little bit speculative, but I'm going to take him at 27. At 28, I'm going to take Jake LaRavia. He was picked 19. He was picked 19 by the old mates, the Memphis Grizzlies. They didn't really use him very much at all. They went with Roddy over him nearly the majority of the time. And I thought that the game that LaRavia has, defense, passing, shooting, scoring, would be really useful. He had a lot of injuries this season. I'm not giving up on him. I am down on him. I think I had him at 18 or 17 in the draft when I did it. He didn't really get a fair shake in Memphis, but they were crying out for that sort of player, a perfect Kyle Anderson replacement, and they didn't use him, which is a little bit concerning. But I still think there's something there. And then the last two picks were first rounders. I've got Ty Washington, who went at 29. I've got him going at 29. And I've got Nikola Jovic, little Chungus, who went at 27. I've got going at 30. I thought Jovic was... A lot of people thought Jovic was a lottery player. I didn't. A lot of people thought he was a steal at 27. I didn't. I think his play this season would prove that... Well, not prove it. Would show that I'm on the track to being correct. But he was okay enough. Has some shooting upside, some passing upside. Defensively, he's a real problem. Not really sure what his best position is. Is it center? Is it the four? Is it a Lauri Markkanen-style tall three? He is younger. That gives him a boost. So there's enough there with little Chungus that I am going to take him with that final first round pick, but I'm not super excited about it. So that's my first round. What did you think? Who do you think was in the wrong spot, the right spot? What would you do differently? Let me know in the comments. Out of the first round picks, who didn't I reselect in the first round? Well, I didn't pick Dalen Terry, a guy that didn't do a huge amount in the G League, still has some positional size and you could easily slot him in at 28 or 29, but I just don't think there's really much there with him. I didn't pick Marjan Beauchamp, who's got some strength, played some minutes for the Bucks, but you know, I think the other guys have a little bit more value. I didn't pick Blake Wesley, who I do actually like as a player, but his shooting and finishing was pretty horrendous this season, and that would need to get better. I didn't go with Wendell Moore, and I didn't pick Patrick Baldwin. So there's like five first-round picks that I didn't pick because I moved in Pig Williams and Jaden Hardy. Who did I move in? I moved in Andrew Nembhard. I moved in Pig Williams. I moved in Jaden Hardy. I moved in Bryce McGowans. The other second-round guys that I considered were Christian Coloco. I considered Caleb Houston and Max Christie a little bit. I think they can be okay still. I know that the Grizzlies weirdly waived Kennedy Chandler. I'd be signing him if I was a team. I think there's something there with Kennedy Chandler. The other guys that I'd be interested in to keep an eye on are Ryan Rollins and Josh Minot, who didn't really do anything this season, but I think there's a little bit there with him. Oh, the other second round I got was Jabari Walker down at 57. But those other guys, Rollins and Minot, and Christie, Coloco, and Houston are some other guys that were in the discussion for me. And that will do it for me today. Don't forget to follow this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on the Odyssey app. And if you're here on YouTube, please thumb it up. Leave your comments down below, guys. We are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.